You're listening to the New Evangelicals Podcast. Hey everyone, I'm Tim.
And I'm April.
And welcome to the New Evangelicals Recaps. Every Friday, April and I will help you stay up to date on what's happening in this bizarre, strange, and sometimes kind of crazy Christian culture we find ourselves in while having a little fun along the way. Let's get into this week's recap. Friends, welcome back. On this episode of TNE Recaps, April could not be on this one. She had a pre-existing appointment with the doctor, but I do have Andrew Whitehead on for our monthly end of the month recap of Christian nationalism in the news. So Andrew, good to see you again. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, good to see you too. Did anything happen in the last couple of weeks? I don't know, like around Christian nationalism?
Not much. You know, it's really minimal stuff. Yeah. Oh man, yeah. I mean, as always, I mean, I gotta say, out of all the topics that I cover, Christian nationalism is the gift that keeps on giving. There is always something in the news to talk about, and yeah. I figured we could start off with a bang because this week, I mean, Donald Trump tends to break the internet pretty often, and it's honestly almost impressive how often he can do this. But he did it again because, as we know, Andrew, it is Holy Week, and today, when this recording comes out, it is Good Friday, and it just is amazing how even Jesus Christ can't get his own holiday without Trump trying to smack himself in the middle of it and grab a piece of that Jesus pie, because yeah, it turns out that Trump is selling his own Trump-endorsed Bible, the God Bless the USA Bible. So he did a three-minute-long video promoting this thing. I figured we should start off for our Christian nationalists in the news segment. We should just play this whole video and let the audience hear how Trump is trying to sell a Bible during Holy Week, which, by the way, if you guys haven't realized out there, yes, Trump is facing some serious legal bills that cost a lot of money that he doesn't really have right now. So the timing to me is a little, you know, it's a little odd if you ask me. So does that work for you? I say we go ahead and play it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. And then I'll give you all the context. Actually, I'll tell you what. Why don't I do this first? So here's the backstory to this, everyone. Trump is selling a Bible called the God Bless the USA Bible. It's in partnership with his friend who wrote the song God Bless the USA. And the website claims that Trump is getting no profits from selling this Bible. Now, obviously, he definitely charged something to at least license his name and to say that I'm going to endorse it. But given that Trump is not really a trustworthy person, I would not be surprised if there is some shell company set up that a small royalty is going to that inadvertently funds like the Trump legal team or something kind of fishy like that. But anyway, so that being said, Trump released this video. Let's go ahead and play the whole thing, and then I'll get your thoughts on it, Andrew. Here we go.
My very good friend, Lee Greenwood, who doesn't love his song, God Bless the USA, in connection with promoting the God Bless the USA Bible. This Bible is the King James Version and also includes our founding father documents. Yes, the Constitution, which I'm fighting for every single day very hard to keep Americans protected. Also, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the Pledge of Allegiance are all part of this God Bless the USA Bible. And it's just very important and very important to me. I want to have a lot of people have it. You have to have it for your heart, for your soul. Many of you have never read them and don't know the liberties and rights you have as Americans and how you are being threatened to lose those rights. It's happening all the time. It's a very sad thing that's going on in our country, but we're going to get it turned around. Religion and Christianity are the biggest things missing from this country, and I truly believe that we need to bring them back, and we have to bring them back fast. I think it's one of the biggest problems we have. That's why our country is going haywire. We've lost religion in our country. All Americans need a Bible in their home, and I have many. It's my favorite book. It's a lot of people's favorite book. This Bible is a...
I'm sorry. I got to pause. I just cannot. I'm sorry. I just can't believe this. I can't believe this guy says this stuff and people are going to buy this Bible. They're going to buy it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, really leaning into, you know, and this isn't even the first time. Like last year, he was indicted around Easter during Holy Week, and he drew direct kind of connections to himself and wrongfully being, you know, charged with a crime, just like Jesus was. And so
just like Jesus.
It really is in line with kind of the whole thing that we've been seeing. And so, yeah, when I saw this happen during Easter, you know, week leading up to Easter, selling a Bible, I was like, it's just completely on brand. I'm not surprised at all anymore. But really, too, as you play the rest of it, it's just, it's amazing, too, how much of it he's mailing in, right? He's just kind of rambling.
Totally.
He's going to say more and more of just these little phrases that he just kind of trots out whenever. Like, it's just kind of lazy, but yet just drawing these things together, which will resonate with a particular crowd for sure.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we'll keep it going.
Here Reminder that the biggest thing we have to bring back America and to make America great again is our religion. Religion is so important. It's so missing, but it's going to come back, and it's going to come back strong, just like our country is going to come back strong. In the end, we do not answer to bureaucrats in Washington. We answer to God in heaven. Christians are under siege. We must protect content that is pro-God. We love God, and we have to protect anything that is pro-God. We must defend God in the public square and not allow the media or the left-wing groups to silence, censor, or discriminate against us. We have to bring Christianity back into our lives and back into what will be, again, a great nation.
Can I just point out, too, that this man was found liable of raping a woman by a jury of his own peers. And this man is holding a Bible and really trying to convince Christians that somehow he is a man of faith, a man of religion, and that we have to bring God back to America. The disconnect between this man's actions and the book that he holds, or, you know, the biblical worldview he claims to have, can't be farther apart. And yet, Christians, I'm going to be clear, many conservative, MAGA-loving evangelical Christians really do not see this to be a huge problem at all. And many are going to buy this Bible because Trump is endorsing it. It just really continues to baffle me to see that my own faith tradition, you know, really thinks that men like this are embodying and fighting for these so-called Christian values, despite his life being the complete opposite of that.
Well, and I think to that point, you know, what really is kind of the key that unlocks it is some of the things that he's just said and will continue to say in the rest of the video about, you know, recognizing and leaning into this idea of persecution and Christians are under attack and Christianity is slipping away, right? So when a group feels threatened, the best, quickest way to know who we are is to know who we're not.
Right.
And so if you can help the group draw that strict identity and boundary line around this is who we are and we're under attack, they're going to be really willing to listen to anyone. And to go behind the strong man, and all these really wrap into Christian nationalism, as well as we'll discuss in a bit.
Yeah, 100%.
Our founding fathers did a tremendous thing when they built America on Judeo-Christian values. Now that foundation is under attack, perhaps as never before.
There it is.
What can we do? Stand up, speak out, and pray that God will bless America again. I'm proud to endorse and encourage you to get this Bible. We must make America pray again. Pray, get educated, get motivated, and stand with me and the legions of Americans asking God to bless our great nation, to bring our great nation back, and to make America great again. I'm proud to partner with Lee in this offering. He's a very special man, both as a talent, but maybe even more so as a human being. He's very, very special. And I think you all should get a copy of God Bless the USA Bible now and help spread our Christian values with others. There you have it. Let's make America pray again. God bless you and God bless the USA.
Well, there you go, Andrew. I mean, that was Trump's speech to sell. And the Bible retails for $60, everyone, just so you know, which honestly I thought was pretty expensive. But then I Googled the cost of Bibles and like, It's on the higher end, but it's not crazy. There are Bibles that you can spend 50, 60, even $100 on. So, but still, the point remains, you know, it's a leather-bound Bible. It has the American flag like embedded or emblazoned on the front. It says, mm-hmm. either God bless the USA, and it says Holy Bible. So that's what Trump is selling. I had to play that full 3-minute clip of him trying to sell it. And just happy Holy Week, I guess, in the words of Trump, which isn't even the right way to address Holy Week, but I digress. So
yeah. Well, and then too, the fact that it includes founding documents from the US, right? Like it's such a perfect example and encapsulation of what has been happening for years now with, what does that mean for those who are not US citizens, right? Like
right.
The Bible with the American flag emblazoned on the front cover, and then our founding documents, which many of us would agree are really great. You know, there's a lot to like about America, for sure. I'm on board with that. Democracy, right. Love it.
Right.
Constitution, right. All those things are great. But
yeah.
What does that mean for folks, the majority of Christians who are not Americans, right? What does that mean for them and the fact that these are intertwined together? Those are just some of the questions that get lost and that we have to continue to ask, I think.
Yeah, it's really amazing when you think about it, how insular American Christian nationalism really is, right? Like the worldview is so focused on what's in front of them that they can't imagine ways of thinking about the world outside of that bubble. And so everything that they create is pretty much a assimilate or die kind of attitude, right? Where it's like, hey, either people submit to how we see things, or we just have to conquer them, because there's no way that people can live outside the bubble that we exist in and have a functioning, you know, maybe theology or Christian ethic or other religious ethic. So it is, you know, for this world to operate, I feel like you have to really shut out a lot of the world, globally speaking, and really operate where the God that you serve really is primarily concerned about the U.S., its history, and its future, because everyone else is dependent upon it.
Yeah, no, it really is a closed system. And I think that's why we see Christian nationalism really as so ascendant within, you know, a particular strand of, and particularly powerful strand of evangelical Christianity over time, right? Because that form of reading the Bible and understanding Christianity and this particular expression of Christianity really can be a house of cards where if one thing gets pulled out, much of the rest will fall down. And so, you know, entertaining any sort of doubt or expanding, dealing with any sort of questions really is uncomfortable. And so you have evangelicals from other countries, you know, these are evangelical Christians. They look at it and they think, what is going on here? And many of the same Orthodox theological beliefs, all of those are the same, but culturally, all those add-ons, they really can recognize it. And it becomes really clear something else is going on here. But for those in the system, you know, it's like the fish recognizing the water they're swimming in. It can be really difficult. And I think we were both kind of in those waters as well.
Yes.
Right. And it really is a powerful thing.
Yeah, it is. It's powerful, right? It truly is. And it's hard to explain why. It just works really well. And you just tend not to think too broadly, you know? And so because you're thinking so insular and your whole culture kind of reinforces the worldview that you have, it just kind of makes sense for you. And therefore you think it must make sense for everyone else as well. And, you know, again, like we're discovering with this kind of way of thinking with Christian nationalism, a lot of these groups are really committed to making this a reality, first in America, but also across the globe. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. I talked to David Gushy. His book, Defending Democracy from Its Christian Enemies, talks about other Christian nationalist movements in other countries and how they manifest. So this is definitely bigger in a sense than just America. But I think what's happening here is kind of like ground zero for what's potentially being exported to other parts of the world.
Yeah, no, and we really do see that. I was talking with a friend who, you know, is studying in a seminary here, but he's from Latin America. And he was saying to me that much of kind of the theological resources that get exported most often are, you know, from very conservative, politically, religiously publishers. Those are the ones being exported to other countries, to those seminaries. So they have a very particular view on what Christianity is and those cultural elements that have to be a part of it, really, that do resonate and reflect Christian nationalism. And so folks from those countries, this is what they're reading and thinking about. And then when they either come here or in their own countries, they're essentially buying right into, well, to be a Christian, you have to vote a certain way, or you have to see these particular social issues from this particular perspective. And so I think that really is happening. You know, he sees it happening in the countries that he's working and operating in, and can sense that this is a real issue. It is being exported in that sense.
Friends, I am so excited to be partnering with Middle Church to promote their event, Freedom Rising, happening April 26th to the 28th, sponsored by the Candler Foundry and happening at Marble Collegiate Church in New York City. This is a three-day conference that you do not want to miss. Find rest, learn how to organize political power, and dream expansively about the world we deserve. And let me tell you, this is a monster speaker lineup with absolute legends, including Dr. Jackie Lewis, Reverend Dr. William Barbara, Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown Douglas, and Robert P. Jones, the founder of the PRRI Institute, which is the place I get all of my Christian nationalism data. This is going to be a three-day event full of learning about how to take care of you and your body, how to take action on crucial issues, and how to live into different ways of being in the world. I plan on being there, and I cannot wait to see you there as well. Get your tickets now at freedomrising.org and be part of this transformative experience. That's freedomrising.org, April 26th to the 28th in New York City. I'll see you there. You move the world.
My name is Joseph Yu, and I am an Episcopalian priest, and I fully believe in what Project Amplify is trying to do, which is to amplify voices and theology, to offer a counter-narrative to the voices and platforms that uses the Bible as a leverage to marginalize, to exclude, and to dehumanize. Project Amplify wants to amplify voices and theology to talk about the love and justice of God and just how diverse and how inclusive our God is and the gospel is. So if you want to help provide a different narrative of what it means to be a Christian and a follower of Christ, please click the link below to donate. Thank you.
An article that caught my eye this month that you also sent me, which I thought was great that we were seeing the same thing, this one really blew me away. I read the whole thing. I had one of my research assistants kind of break it down for me and give me some bullet points on it. But this is from talkingpointsmemo.com. The headline reads, "Inside a secret society of prominent right-wing Christian men prepping for a national divorce." I had no clue about this until this month. So here's a couple things to know, friends. So there's a men-only group called the Society for American Civic Renewal, or it's known as SACR inside of its circles, S-A-C-R. It's aiming to secure a future for Christian families by reshaping the U.S. to a conservative Christian nation. According to the article, the group states that in order to join, you must 100% commit to all beliefs by the group. In their own words, they state that faithfulness and alignment with the group is a deference to an acceptance of the wisdom of our American and European Christian forebears in the political realm, a traditional understanding of patriarchal leadership in the household, and acceptance of traditional natural law and ethics more broadly. After gaining access through a member's email, this is the website here, TPM, that's Talking Points Memo, discovered that the group is explicitly patriarchal, demanding that group members assume a dominant role at home and celebrates the use of force and existence of authority. And in these same emails, which they were accessed due to Boise State University being a public institution, they discovered that the president of the Claremont Institute is also a member. They also discovered a copy of the group's mission statement and objectives. And I have a few copies of that actually here. Again, this is all per the article. I'll put it in the show notes. This is SACR's mission statement, internal. "Our aim is to build and maintain a robust network of capable men who can reverse our society's decline and return us to the successful path off which America has strayed. We acknowledge our intellectual, political, and social inheritance of both America's founding and of Christendom. We are unhyphenated Americans, and we believe in particular Christianity that is not blurred by modernist philosophies. We ambitiously point to an ideal based on that dual inheritance. We are willing to act decisively to secure permanently, as much as anything is permanence, the political and social dominance of that ideal." And the last thing they say here in their internal mission statement, "To that end, our organization seeks to recruit men of good character whose loyalties are grounded in strong virtue, correct religion, the moral life, and piety toward their forebears. Most of all, we seek those who understand the nature of authority and its legitimate force exercised in the temporal realm. Our conviction is that a brotherhood of these men will form the backbone of a renewed American regime that will reflect the past while facing and vigorously shaping the future. So, wow. I mean, this is an invite-only group, and you have to be very wealthy. That's like one of the stipulations here to be part of this. But yeah, this is like a legit shadow network of predominantly, from what I can tell, white men who are trying to reshape and reclaim America with patriarchy and hierarchy in mind.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what's so interesting too about this group, and I hope folks go and read that article, and there's a follow-up one too on Talking Points Memo about it. But you can really kind of go tick down the list, right, of what the definition of Christian nationalism is that is empirically supported, right? This desire to see a particular expression of Christianity privileged in American civic life and have the government vigorously preserve and defend that cultural framework as central to American civic life. And they're saying in there, right, we want to revise the government. We need to understand authority. And it is a particular Christianity that they're interested in making central, right? So right there, it's really in line with where they're going. And then as you read what they're about, and as you highlighted, you know, very traditional understanding of social hierarchy, who's at the top, men lead, women follow and take care of the home. And then, you know, folks that are, you know, in heterosexual relationships, that's what's central and what society should prize. Then, you know, we need to fall behind a leader that is powerful. And further in that article, they kind of float this idea of, you know, we need kind of like a Caesar. We need somebody that just comes in and will enforce our particular view on everyone else. And so authoritarian social control is central to Christian nationalism. And on it goes, right? So it really does provide this wonderful example of exactly what this cultural framework is about and what that would look like if American society, you know, walked into that. And this is a group, like you said, that it can't be that large when we're talking about the totality of the United States, but
right.
Powerful and influential people that have access to, you know, those that are in political power, that matters, right? It isn't just a zero sum thing. It's if you have access to positions of power, that really matters. And so it's just not about rote numbers, but where those numbers are located.
That's right. According to the article, members are required to have one of the following qualities: influence, capability, or wealth. The group is very anti-same-sex marriage and consistently uses European, aka whiteness, as a member necessity. So it's very clear what they're trying to do. They even have prayers that they recommend for chapter events. Here's one of the prayers. I'm going to read it. I think it just is very telling. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, we call upon the help of God to establish, empower, and guide us in our mission of civic renewal. May God unite us in this mission as Joshua's men when they defeated the mighty walls of Jericho, as Nehemiah men who rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem, as Saint Constantine's men when they conquered in the sign of the cross. May the light of Christendom be restored in our homeland, and may America not fall to those who hate God. May God establish our civil authorities as his ministers of justice, and may we and our sons never partake from the table scraps of the enemies of God, but rely forever on God's generous providence. Through our loyal cooperation and perseverance under God, may he develop in us all necessary shrewdness and strength, and may our sons live to see the commonplace grateful reception in our homeland of God's gifts of human nature, sanctified marriage, and children and grandchildren, and the renewal of all good and proper earthly labors, especially those of the patriarch and statesman. May God show his mercy upon America and bless us as we entrust our lives and mission to God. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, amen. That is one hell of a prayer. I mean, wow. There's a lot of layers there. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is it is,
wow.
Yeah, it is a whole idea and plan and vision for the society should look like and the desires that they have. And in that article, right, too, and even in the headline, this idea of preparing for national divorce, this idea that we want to weaken the federal government to such an extent that folks like us can kind of live wherever we want to and kind of follow our own rules, right? That's explicitly the idea that they're talking about. And SACR is a part of this larger group project 2025. That was another political story that came out just recently. And there's about 100 different groups, many of which identify as explicitly Christian nationalists. And again, their goal is to, with another Trump administration, kind of have a policy plan in place that will help encourage this particular view and expression of Christianity to be central in all that that entails, right? All the cultural elements of Christian nationalism kind of go with it. And that's the goal. That's the plan.
No, I completely agree. I mean, you know, it's interesting because I always say that when we tell people this stuff, we're not trying to sound conspiratorial or like we have, you know, tinfoil hats on. There's real data here. You know, this is like an investigative piece. This is well researched. I'm looking at primary sources from internal memos of the group. This group has a website. You can go and see what they're all about. They make it pretty clear even on their own public website. This is real stuff. And you're right. Project 2025 is the larger piece of this pie with over, I think you said 100 or something like that, say 80 or 100, you know, far right or right wing groups who are all kind of pooling their time, money, and resources and have created an 800 page playbook that is designed for President Trump on day one to implement to really take back America from the liberals. I mean, this really comes down to political partisanship, right? Like the language here is that there are dark forces in America. Those dark forces take the manifestation of Democrats or liberals or the radical left, and we have to take the country back because they want to destroy what America is. I mean, in fact, Charlie Kirk, I just covered this today on Instagram, actually. He went to a church a couple weeks ago and said, you cannot be a Christian and vote Democrat. They are incompatible. Yeah. And then his reason was the classic culture war issues that right wingers make, they hang their hat on, essentially, right? And so this is kind of the language of Christian nationalism, that it's not about giving away power, right? Like how Christ gives away power to go to the cross. It's not about that at all. It's actually about consolidating power and maintaining power from everyone else but their own in-group, right? So the in-group has to maintain the power. The out-groups have power stripped from them. And that's the way Christian nationalism is designed to function, where they're on top and they rule and everyone else is kind of underneath of that, assimilating into it, or you know, maybe they're thrown in jail or something, which is, again, not an exaggeration. Stephen Wolf, Case for Christian Nationalism, he says it on camera. He's all for blasphemy laws and has no problem putting atheists in prison under Christian nationalism. So we're not exaggerating when I tell you this stuff.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. I mean, we can listen and believe what they say when they say it, right? In public or on podcasts or what they write. And it's key. And it's almost as though power is like some sort of idol of Christian nationalism or something, right? It is really central to the way that's understood. And we can keep unpacking that, you know, even as we talk today. But yeah, the idea is to be afraid because forces of evil are coming after you. And so follow behind us and we will lead the way by ensuring we have what our in-group needs at the expense of those that we say are on the outside. And that's been key for decades now. Yeah. I mean, it's still part of this worldview.
100%. What is the research saying? I mean, is there any new data out there as far as Christian nationalism goes? You know, last month you and I covered the PRI data, then I did another episode even doing a deeper dive on that. So that's the newest data that I saw. Is there anything else in the research that has you know, caught your attention?
Yeah, no, there really has been. There was a new column posted by Paul Jupe. He's a political scientist at Denison University in Ohio. And he has a book, a great book that he co-wrote with some others on Christian nationalism. And I need to get that name exact. And we can link to it. He has a blog, a column that he publishes on religion in public. So he constantly on there is you know, posting these really great columns. Yeah, there you go, right there. Yeah. So really great, you know, coverage of new data he's collected, or, you know, breaking down data in a really accessible manner and just looking at politics, religion, and culture and how these things intersect. So he has this new column, Christian nationalism is both smear and savior to many Christians. And this came out just a couple, like 10 days ago or so. But what's so fascinating about it is they gather data, and he and some colleagues, and what they found was that when they asked their respondents, and this was just early this year, they gathered all this data, they asked for a level of agreement with the question, Christian nationalism is a term invented by the left to smear conservative Christians. And what they found was over 40% of their sample agreed or strongly agreed that Christian nationalism as a term is just an invented one that is just used to smear conservative Christians. But then they also asked the question for level of agreement with Christian nationalism is the only idea that will save this fallen nation. And of that 40% of people who said, no, it's just a made-up term that's a smear, over two-thirds, 68%, strongly agreed that it's the only way to save this nation. So on multicolored figure that you had just popped up, you can see how this breaks out. So the line there on the very right, you can see that strongly agree. And that's looking at strongly agree with Christian nationalism as a term invented by the left to smear Christians. And then the colored boxes, the agree and strongly agree, the light pink and the darker pink, that's the number of those folks who think it's a smear that say, well, Christian nationalism is the only idea that will save this fallen nation. 68% of those people that say it's just a smear think, well, also, it's the only thing that can save this nation. So what's that? What that's telling us is that as we think about this term Christian nationalism, for those that feel threatened by it or say, oh, it's just trying to marginalize conservative Christians or it's out to just make us feel bad about bringing our faith in the public sphere, they really do believe that Christian nationalism is the answer to save this nation, right? So there's something in there, right? Now, what could they be thinking when they hear Christian nationalism, right? We could say, well, they just think it's faith being brought into the public sphere. But Paul and his colleagues, they asked additional questions that help us really pull out, well, what are they thinking of when they think of Christian nationalism? So they asked a question about asking for level of agreement that Christians, Christians should be able to, or should, God wants Christians to stand atop the seven mountains of society, whether that's government, education, business, et cetera. Right. And so I'm sure on your channel, you've talked about dominionism, right? And the seven mountains mandate. So these folks that believe it is a smear, but also believe that it's the only way to save this fallen nation, are interpreting Christian nationalism as Christians taking control of the various mountains of society, right? So it really is something where they see Christianity and their expression as central. So it isn't just bringing your faith into the public sphere. It's about Christians taking control. And so in this figure you have here, Paul shows, you know, the term Christian nationalism is just a term invented by the left, really strong association with desiring the Seven Mountains mandate. Or Christian nationalism is the only idea that will save this nation, really strong association with the Seven Mountain mandate. So to break this down, what Paul shows, and again, I think you'll be able to link to his column, really want people to go and read it, is that these respondents, there's three parts to this. They believe Christian nationalism is just a made up smear.
Right.
But Christians should take dominion over society. Right. And Christian nationalism is the only way to save our nation. So when we talk about Christian nationalism, the public discourse, especially from those who maybe feel threatened by this focus on exactly what they would like to see happen, and it's kind of bringing to light the negative aspects of dominionism and this desire to see Christianity privileged, they're going to try and redefine what it means. They're going to try and say, oh, it's just a smear, or they're just attacking us because we want to bring our faith in the public sphere. But deep down, really what we're seeing is that they recognize, no, I do want this expression of Christianity as central, and it does mean taking control. And, right. and those are the parts that if we're committed to any American, whether you're secular, Christian, whatever minority religion in this country, if we're focused on and we want to see a pluralistic democratic society continue to exist, we have to be, you know, cognizant of Christian nationalism, the view that it has of this country. And for those that buy into it, they really do want to see it central to what this country has been about.
Hi, my name is Courtney. I live in London, United Kingdom, and I am a TNE monthly donor. I'm a domestic abuse survivor and was raised with John MacArthur and purity culture rhetoric. I left my abuser in September 2020, moving from LA to Southern Utah. I had been a Cali girl my whole life, so seeing the Christian nationalism and patriarchy present in Utah gave me quite a shock. During that time, I began deconstructing and making sense of my abuse and how my church upbringing and political affiliations contributed to it. It's a painful discovery that I'm still coming to terms with. I've never been a big believer in tithing, but you guys gave me a mission I can get behind. I hate that term now, but I don't know of any other more fitting. The U.S. is on a trajectory mirroring that of 1930s Germany, and if something isn't done soon to circumvent that, I worry what the repercussions would be, not just for the U.S., but for the whole world.
You Yeah, that's really helpful. And that's a really interesting poll because I remember, what was it, a few maybe weeks ago now, an MSNBC reporter, you know, said Christian nationalism is believing that our rights come from God, and not from government. It was a very unhelpful, like, you know, uncharitable, like, definition of Christian nationalism, to be fair. But like people, yeah. A lot of folks who are on either self-admitted Christian nationalists or who deal in that world went crazy, right? Oh, look, yeah. This is what they think about us the whole time. But this data actually helps us know that, well, actually, when we talk about Christian nationalism, even if people want to avoid the term, the ideology behind it, there's a major link between, oh, the left is using it to smear me, but also deep down, I actually kind of believe it. So, you know, it just kind of, it's an interesting data point, right? Because it kind of, I think, shows, I'm not sure what the right language is for this, but not that those people are necessarily lying, but maybe they're almost like self-deluded into believing that, like, I don't actually believe this, but I actually do deep down. And it's just a very interesting way to look at the idea of, oh, I think it's a smear, but I also believe it as well. And so yeah. I do want the country to be ruled by people like me because, you know, the seventh mandate and things like that. So that's fascinating. Yeah. It's also fascinating that the Seven Mountain Mandate has gotten so much traction, broadly speaking, with Christian nationalism. And this actually goes back to that PRRI data piece that we talked about. One of the most surprising pieces of that data was the very high correlation to gifts of the Spirit, like the more Pentecostal gifts of the Spirit, and Christian nationalism. I think it was like 75% or air. It was very high. And that really shocked me because on Twitter, I track people who are definitely in the charismatic space for sure, but also, you know, like someone like a William Wolfe would not be someone who identifies in that Pentecostal tradition. In fact, I as far as I can tell, he would be pretty anti a lot of what Pentecostals believe, but he's still very much a Christian nationalist. So it's interesting though to know that broadly speaking, for the average layperson who might find strong support or adherence to Christian nationalism, the gifts of the Spirit, the gift of healing, prophecy, are actually very connected to Christian nationalist beliefs long-term. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And I think you can kind of look at when Trump was in you know, the presidency, his evangelical board, right, or those advisors, right? It had Paul White McCain. So somebody very much in that charismatic tradition, and then you had others from traditions, you know, that really wouldn't be aligned with that. But what brings together is this cultural framework of Christian nationalism. And so it can really include a lot of those various differences. I mean, unite kind of in this shared vision for what the United States is all about. And something too that I just want to highlight that Paul wrote about in the column that kind of puts the, you know, kind of a nice period on what we just found, or what he just found, is that too, this plays into, and we heard this in the Trump clip at the top, the Christian persecution complex, that you are under attack. And so the only way forward to save this nation is to take control, because everyone is coming for you to take all of that away.
Right.
And that's what's been so successful at mobilizing supporters, is to feel this level of fear. And that when we look at what Christian nationalism is, empirically show that it exists and define it, to say that it's just a smear, but also that we do actually want it to take control in the United States, it motivates and mobilizes because they feel that persecution and fear coming down on them. And that's a really key part of this as well, because ultimately politics is about power, right? And how that is used. And it isn't as though Christians can't take part, can't vote their values, can't bring their faith in the public sphere. That isn't what we're saying. And that's not what Christian nationalism is. We can bring our faith into the public sphere. We can exercise power, but it's to whose benefit, right? Yeah. Is it just for the in-group, just for this very particular group? Or like with Sacker, you know, men who adhere to these very particular understandings of Christianity and family and marriage and all of that? Or is this country made for a larger slice, right? More than just that. And I think that's where, again, just being really clear, it isn't about just faith or Christianity in the public sphere. The elevation of a very particular expression that is focused on privileging the us, the in-group.
Yeah. And so to bring this full circle, when Trump sells a Trump-endorsed Bible, that's who he's talking to, right? When he uses the language of our rights are being taken away, We have to fight for our country. He's talking to these people.
Yeah, these are the groups that can hear and see that message. And it's going to resonate with them because in some ways they're primed for those messages. So like Trump holding that Bible in the video that you showed, or if folks who are listening to the podcast go and watch him rolling that out. I mean, you can see images, resonating images with during the summer of 2020 with George Floyd and the clearing of Lafayette Square, where he went and stood in front of the church and just held the Bible up. And the folks that saw that, the message was clear, right?
Yeah.
And those are the things that are going to resonate. It's this idea of this is who we are, what we're all about. It's about authority. It's about following in line. I will protect you because you are under attack. Things are being taken away from you. And I'm the only one that can protect you.
Yep. And the Bible is the religious symbol that gives it some kind of faith-based grounding of God is on our side because of how we interpret specific verses of these of this Bible, right? Like Trump is a new Cyrus. I've now seen some arguments that Trump is a Samson figure. So the Bible gets reinterpreted consistently through the lens of a Christian nationalist or a Christian nationalism to then justify why strong man is our guy, why we need to build crosses for our enemies, not bear crosses like Jesus tells us to, right? Mm-hmm. So like all those things go into what makes the fruit of Christian nationalism where, hey, we have to take over to save America from doom. And the only way to do that is by being in charge because God has given us that ordained that right as ordained through how we interpret the Bible. So I think that's really good. Let's go ahead and get to the admonishment here. You know, let's go ahead and try and get to some maybe some good news or force people out there to think about, well, what do we do now? How do we think about this as Christians? You and I are very much committed Christians. Our faith drives the work that both of us do in our own ways. And it is Good Friday. And I was thinking about that actually. I was thinking about how, you know, there's something very powerful about what Good Friday signifies, right? The idea that God incarnate divests his own power and goes to a cross willingly for the sake of the other, even his enemies. That's a very, very powerful teaching and belief in the Christian tradition that drives the core of the gospel, right? That we were, at odds with our creator and God made a way. I mean, that there's something powerful about that. Christian nationalism, as we've covered, I think has an invertedness about that, where it's more about building those crosses to crucify their enemies instead of loving their enemies. And so I would like your thoughts, you know, Andrew, for you, Good Friday, what it represents for you, how you think about it through the lens of the work that you do, maybe in your book, et cetera. The floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, no, I think power is really central to that. And like you said, you know, as I was thinking through power as a central idol to Christian nationalism, and then in the book trying to think, well, then how does Jesus relate to power? Mm. Right. And so in writing in that section of the book, thinking through, well, one of the most kind of amazing stories in the Gospels that share with us is this idea of, you know, when Jesus was out in the desert and tempted. And Satan came and is quoting scripture to Jesus about what he would do for him. And how was Jesus relating to power? And the fact that Satan and the tempter was saying, you know, if you bow to me, I can give you the keys to the whole world. And that means that this tempter and Satan had the right to do that, right? Like that was a part of what he could do. But in that moment, Jesus turned from that. Or even before Pilate, when Pilate's like, don't you realize I can set you free? And Jesus is like, I don't, that type of power is not what I'm here for, right? I'm here for something else. And so just like you had said, I look at the gospel and think about this week, and there's a lot about Christianity historically that we have to wrestle with that is very dark, but there are beautiful aspects. And this is one of the beautiful aspects that keeps me coming back is this idea of Jesus and Christianity being about setting aside what works best for you or what's all about you and thinking about giving of oneself for others, right? And the fact that setting aside what may rightfully be yours to the benefit of all and to others. And so I think that is still beautiful. And that type of power of sacrifice and of giving, and as you put this idea of bearing crosses, right? When Jesus came, the only blood that he shed was his own, right? And so it isn't about taking control of others, but of living, giving, sacrificing, dying for others and for a beloved community, for a common flourishing for those around us. And so I think those are the things that still keep me coming back. And yeah, and as I thought through this and wrote about in the book, that's a Christianity that can bring itself into the public sphere and not be solely focused on making it and about us, right? And yes, only benefiting us, but can be a faith that is involved in the public sphere, is involved with power and the distribution of resources and all those things that we have to be a part of as humans, right? Living together. Yeah. It can be a faith that comes into that, but in such a way that does not marginalize our neighbors, does not force anyone on the outside, and not even our neighbors who embrace Christian nationalism, right? They have a right to exist. They have a right to be a part of this political process, but not at the head of the table, which maybe they would want, but that we're all together around working, compromising towards a future. And I think that's something that we can be a part of and partner with folks who are secular, folks that are of other religions. We can all be a part of that work together.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I totally agree. You know, as someone who, a lot of our work also deals in like this deconstruction space on the theological side. So people are kind of trying to renegotiate, you know, what do they actually believe about God and the Bible? And what does Easter mean? You know, a lot of people are kind of in the middle of that, I think, as well. And for me, this whole weekend, there's still something for me that is very beautiful and mystical about it. You know, the idea that God would take human form, that God would divest his power for the sake of the other as a model for how us as humans are to live. And then also the idea of God as conqueror of death. I love that. I think that gives me a beautiful hope that one day all the crooked of the world will be made straight. All of the brokenness, all the things that we can't fix now will be made right once again. And that to me gives me deep meaning and deep hope that at the end of the day, death does not have the final say. You know, I don't know if I can prove how that works or if I have, you know, incontrovertible proof that this is exactly the reality. But regardless, that belief gives me hope that there is something beyond me that sees the injustice of the world and that is working with humanity to make those wrongs right. So to me, I think Easter just has a really beautiful meaning to it. And it's something that I still look forward to every year, even as I'm rethinking, what do I actually believe about the tradition and how deep, you know, is the Christian tradition itself and the Bible, all that stuff, which I love. But for me, I'm still very much grounded in the resurrection. It just is a very powerful imagery and belief and story that just gives me immense hope and meaning. Yeah. So let's get to a palate cleanser. I mean, I love doing the palate cleanser. I want to go first on this one.
Yeah, please go.
I saw finally one of my favorite bands of all time last night. The band is called Dirty Loops. Okay. Now, if you know Dirty Loops, you're already a huge fan. If you don't, I totally get it. They're a trio out of Sweden, but they're funk fusion. They are, Andrew, they're so good. Like, they're disgusting musicians. Their mixes are phenomenal. And they got famous on YouTube by doing covers of like Justin Bieber Baby or Britney Spears, but they do really unique arrangements, really complicated arrangements. So they finally came to the US to go on tour. And so I got tickets and me and my wife went to Philly last night and it was everything and more. It was one of the best shows of my life. So that was it was such a great night. I'd have tons of videos. I've rewatched them all 1,000 times. It was great. Good. So that was my palate cleanser for this week, was seeing Dirty Loops.
Oh man, that's awesome. I love hearing that. There's nothing like live music, right? Like, it 100%. Really is just an incredible shared experience. So that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that.
It was
great. That's really great. Cool. Yeah. So, you know, one thing that is got me kind of jazzed up this week that I'll be excited about, it's actually upcoming, is so I really love following swimming. Right. So I grew up like age group swimming. That was my thing, my sport. Still do it. Love it. So I follow it pretty closely. So I've never heard of Dirty Loops, but I'm going to YouTube them after this. I'm going to get to know them. But the thing I do really follow closely is swimming. And the NCAA men's championships happen to be in Indianapolis this weekend. So it's starting tonight. It runs through Saturday. So I'm going to be able to go one of the nights. I won't be able to go all the nights, although I would love to, but, you know, got to be a father and a husband. I can't just totally check out, but yeah. I'll go Saturday. And what's great about it, what I'm excited about, is that there are a number of swimmers who will be at these championships that you're going to see in Paris at the Olympics dominating, right? So one of them is Leon Marchand. So he is from France. He's like a junior at Arizona State. But just last summer at the World Championships, he broke Michael Phelps's 400 IM record that has stood for 20 plus years. Longest world record that has stood. He broke it, and he's going to continue to drop time. So he's just a phenomenal swimmer, but he'll be here. So I'll be able to go and watch him swim, which there will be other folks that are probably favored for gold in Paris that I'll get to see. But I'm excited about that because it's just incredible to me to see what humans are able to do, you know, whether it's through music, right, or through these physical activities. It's just so fun to see people finding that and just taking it to levels that you can't really understand.
Yes.
But just to be a part of and sharing,
yes,
right, that collective experience. So I'm excited about that. So it'll be fun.
Well, I'm happy for you. I will be thinking about you for sure. I might even start watching swimming tonight in YouTube when I'm in bed doom scrolling. I'll just start, you know, YouTube and swimming stuff. Why not?
Yeah, just look for Leon Marchand 400 IM world record. Like it's an incredible swim, what he can do in the pool. But yeah.
I love it.
All right.
Well, Andrew, thanks again for joining me. Listen, have a happy Easter. Everyone out there, same to you and your family. Noah, if you're listening to this, if you want to throw in some dirty loops for the outro, I'm not going to be mad about that. So, all right, friends, have a great weekend. Talk to y'all later on.
Yep. See ya.